I don't get out of the house much these days. I just don't feel like it. Whatever it is that makes you want to go out and about and be around other people, I guess I don't have it anymore. My mom, when I actually do answer her calls, says it sounds like depression, but I guess everybody has that these days. Certainly seems like it from what I can see online, and I spend a lot of time online. Of course, maybe that's just, a selection bias? All of us depressives hold up in our rooms, plugging into places and realities far from our own. Anywhere is better than here, sharing with everyone else about how depressed we are, because why wouldn't we? But it's not like I even share anymore. My day-to-day existence has become a slow and steady quicksand of routine, a drudgery slowly smothering me. I've quit trying to break out of this cycle a long time ago. Working 40 to 50 hours as a convenience store clerk was the extent of my getting out of the house. It was nothing too taxing aside from standing all day, which I'd gotten used to. From there, I'd make the half-mile trek back to my cheap apartment, walking past various fast food establishments that would oftentimes provide my dinner. Down the alley, with its meth heads on bikes digging through the dumpsters, me clutching my fast food bag or my pizza box, sometimes offering a slice or a taco, which they only took half the time because they were often far from hungry and only wanted cash. Up the stairs, past the smoking neighbors, who never say hi or really acknowledge me, and it's there in the living room where I park on the couch and veg out to Netflix and eat until I'm well past uncomfortable. Lie back onto the wrapper and napkin-stuffed cushions, the tower of hot-and-ready boxes teetering on the armrest, stare at the ceiling until the discomfort passes, and I feel at least motivated enough to get myself up and over to my desktop, where I will away the hours until exhaustion takes me. Day in and day out, it's like this. Towards the end of each workday, dread takes hold. I get anxious at the thought of going back to that dark and empty apartment and all of the time I will have to kill. In the morning, the reverse is true. Paranoia overtakes me, and I fear what it will be like to show up at my job, that I will have forgotten how to interact with people, that people will stare at the awful waste of space I've become. Lately, I've considered looking into applying for some sort of disability. I mean, if it is depression, then I have an excuse, right? But most days it seems like my job is the only thing keeping me tethered to reality, and I fear that if I quit, I would completely lose what little grip of reality I still have. The prescription bottle full of antidepressants winks up at me daily from the bathroom counter. I'd tried once before, many times than that, even in my youth, but they don't take. In fact, they had the opposite effect, and almost sent me inpatient, so I'm scared of trying more. Even though the doctor says that it can take a while to find the right meds. This lifestyle of mine has taken a toll on my body. My knees hurt during my shift. I've had to upsize my work shirts. There are calluses on my wrists and elbows from where I rest them on the desk, the mouse, the keyboard. I also think I might be developing a cyst on my butt from sitting so long. There's a tenderness back there, a swelling. What can I do about the pathetic state of my mental and physical health? I can only get more depressed whenever I think about it too long, how far I've slid. I avoid mirrors as much as possible and forget even stepping on a scale. I'm only getting worse. I don't even react to the videos I watch. It's like I've forgotten how. Instead, I just watch reaction videos, somebody reacting for me. And there's me staring blankly at it all, a reaction to the reaction. I don't tweet anymore, I don't Discord. All the message boards I used to hang out on have long since died. It used to be that I'd actually game. Now I don't even do that. I just watch others do it. Twitch streams and YouTube highlights, so many rabbit holes to get lost in. It doesn't even really matter the content. I think I'm largely just there for that fleeting human interaction, the feeling that I'm not totally and utterly alone. It's a night like any other. The meal of the day is a 1,500-calorie surplus from Taco Bell. I doom-scroll through Twitter for a bit while I chew my food with only the ghost of a taste present. Before I even really know it, the food is consumed, only a few sips of Baja Blast remaining. My desk chair groans under the weight of my body, and I fire up my PC. I see if anybody is on Twitch, because I prefer live streams when I can. Because, yeah, I don't feel as alone when it's live. There's a whole chat room full of people on the side, talking in real time. And there was a time where I'd join in the conversation. I ignore the call from my mom, but I text her back and tell her that I had a long day and that I would be in touch. There's a handful of streamers that I follow regularly. Lately, I've been talking to the more fast-paced FPS, their Valorants and such. This had led me going to my old reliable streamers with much smaller followings. It's more intimate that way, I guess. This one chick I like is usually playing older stuff. She has a really soothing voice and calls herself the Patient Gamer, dark eyeliner and thick glasses. Total goth chick vibes, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't have a little crush on her. Even though she says she's a lesbian, but whatever, I don't say anything creepy to her. I don't say anything at all. Tonight she's got a playthrough of Life is Strange going on, some game I remembered playing and enjoying when I used to care about such things. I don't remember finishing it, and the screen she's on is foreign to me. It's just two girl characters moving around some seaside-looking place, talking to a guy outside a camper trailer.
Are you still with me, Jacob?
The Patient Gamer asks me. I jump up with a start. That's my name. Is she talking to me? Surely not.
Hello?
She asks, and she's looking directly at the camera, somehow staring into my eyes. With a dry mouth, I manage to say, me?
Listen,
she whispers. Her eyes go blank, like she's staring into space, and the screen starts to glitch, frames stuttering, her head and face jerking, jaw ratcheting open through the skipping video, her mouth widens into an impossible gap. A high-pitched sound of feedback comes from the black void of her slacked jaw mouth, out of my computer speakers. Nobody comments as she stares, retching and gagging there on the screen. Awful, wet sounds that make me gag. The jugular veins of her neck are fat and swollen blue. Her throat bobs as something white emerges from deep within her. It's a loudspeaker, square-shaped, and something you'd see mounted on a pole outside somewhere. Static crackles from the speaker, and I am paralyzed in my chair, unable to click away, unable to shut my ears. A voice starts talking, fills my room with noise, fills my head with fear. It's not the tone of voice, but just some cowboy-sounding man straight from some old-school radio sketch. It's what he's saying.
Howdy, folks! We interrupt your usual programming on this fine and dandy evening with a very special edition of the Rules of the Road. You know, we talk a lot about roads here on the program. Back roads and dirt roads and rough roads, interstates and freeways, highways and byways. Well, tonight we're going to talk about a particular kind of highway that we all know a little too well. This highway can enlighten and enthrall. This highway can educate and misinform. This highway can reprogram and reinforce. And this highway can lead you down some pretty dark paths. Leave you sitting alone in the dark at 3 a.m. and wondering just what it is you're doing with your life. And this highway can be just plain mean. You might ask, what in God's name highway are you talking about, Bucky? There must be something going through Dallas, right? Why, no, I'm not talking about anything as dangerous as a Dallas road. I'm talking about the information superhighway. That's right. Cyberspace. The internet. That big old series of tubes. The World Wide Web. And oh, what a tangled web it is. The world's only gotten smaller since its inception. With each technological leap, our walls close in. I bet you're finding less and less reason to leave the house these days. Got the world at your fingertips. Don't even have to have a face-to-face conversation with a single soul. And isn't it great? All that power, all that information, all the collective memory of recent history. I bet scrolling on that, you might get a taste of what it's like to be in my shoes. You wish. Can compared to where I've been and what I've seen, the access I've been granted. The internet is a little more than a few pages of a phone book. Maybe y'all should sign up for my service provider sometime. It sure is something. Anywho, on to tonight's rule of the road. If at any point during your journey through the interwebs you discover some schmuck in the comments section trying to sell you on a load of horse feathers, then you must respond to their comment with a few specific words. Now I'll get to what those words are here in a minute. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. You know the type of feller I'm talking about. It's the obviously fake commenter looking to scam you in some form or fashion. It's always Mike Wilski in New Jersey, and he's just won the lottery. And he's feeling extra generous and wants you to contact him with your info so he can spread the wealth a little. Or it's Janet Pfeiffer from Grand Rapids, and she's making $650 a month working from home as a stay-at-home mom, and she wants to tell you how you can do it too. I believe the first part is getting knocked up, but I digress. Okay, so now the next step is to respond to the scheming scammer. You must respond with, "That is very interesting, but your money is no good here." They will eventually respond with a website link. You must go to that website. You must watch the grainy black and white video within. You must bear witness. Feel the sinking down in the bottom of your stomach, your rising heart rate, a mixtape of the worst moments of your life. Lick the screen and taste the salt of their tears through the glass. But you already have. It's a taste you will always be familiar with. Now I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, "Bucky, it's Internet Safety 101. You never engage with these devils. They'll hack your information, steal your identity, your car will get repoed, you'll have to declare bankruptcy, and before you know it, you'll be living under a bridge with a brand new name. Your cat won't even recognize you. No way am I going to respond to these yahoos." And to that I say, fair enough. But if you don't, well, these so-called yahoos might pay you a little visit. And I must warn you, they don't take kindly to being ignored. Well, that's all I got for tonight. Hope y'all are doing well out there. Hope you remember to blink every now and then and stretch your necks and adjust your seated position so you don't get a bed sore. Why don't you step outside and get some fresh air? Actually, better rethink that. It is a scary world out there. Much safer online. If you're not on the road, the rules can't get you. Ain't that right? Stay alert, stay lively, stay lonely. I'm Buck Hensley, and these are the rules of the road.
The screen flickers.
"So, I'm gonna go over to this room,"
the patient gamer says, staring at her computer screen. Her mouth is back to normal. The chat room flows on with innocuous comments. Nobody's mentioning the fact that her jaw unhinged with her chin on her chest and her forehead staring at the ceiling, a speaker jutting out of her mouth. I close the browser, push my chair away from the computer. Outside, on my little porch of the upstairs landing, I lean on the railing and stare out at the quiet parking lot for a very long time. Because of where I'm posting this, you can probably guess what happens next. The next few days passed without incident, and it wasn't until the weekends that I saw anything. Most of the time I was avoiding the comment section like the plague, averting my eyes during video game streams. I quit watching the patient gamer, couldn't stand to look at her and revisit that memory of her hideous, outstretched mouth. What if it happened again? I'm watching some guy doing a Half-Life Black Mesa playthrough when I see it. The comments in the chat are scrolling by with the usual stuff. SlutSlayer91 is saying,
"One shot. You must have it on easy mode."
Bananagram keeps begging the streamer to autosave, saying,
"You're just showing off at this point."
And then a user known as JoelKicks37 types out,
"You've been selected. Want $100 to Costco to spend on back-to-school supplies? Click here."
My initial thought is to close everything down and just leave, but I'm in this thing now. I have to respond. I at the Joel guy. I type out what I'm supposed to. I tell him it's all very interesting, but that his money is no good here. And Joel Kicks 37 responds to me with a winky face. He follows this up with a link to a website. It's some obscure jumble of letters and numbers, but it's a definite clickable hyperlink. The mouse is slick with sweat under my palms. I hover over the link, ready to click.
Click it,
Joel Kicks 37 types out. And I do. A media player window fills my screen. There's a big triangle at the center, the universal signal for play. Snowy static swarms over my computer monitor. My living room is filled with the flickering, dreamy, analog glow of a cathode television on a defunct channel. Then the images start to play. Impossible images. Nobody ever had a camera with them when these things happened, but it's like they did. The voices, the images, the sounds, they're all accurate. The phantom cameraman whipping the camera's eye around, getting up close and personal with anyone and everyone. A highlight reel of the worst moments of my life. The mama bird flapped around the nest frantically, her chirps strained with distress. The naked pink baby bird with a solid blue eye, mouth gaping as the life was squeezed out of it, but kept alive long enough to be placed in a half-full Gatorade bottle. Me not saying anything, not even trying, nothing worse than a bystander. Head dipped low in the cyan fluid, membranous wings stretched taut over flexing bones as if it could just take off at any moment, as if it ever even knew how to fly. And I guess it did have one first and final flight. The bottle was punted to the other end of the field where it disappeared into the brush. The way his laughter had an edge to it. An edge sharp enough to cut a wound so deep that it took years to fill it in and forget. Why couldn't I have saved it? Why couldn't I have tried? Oh. The grass on the back of my head and the rough fingertips with the bitten down nails prying my eyelids open. My eyes staring up at the autumn blue sky because they had no choice but to do otherwise. Getting irritated and dry and begging for moisture when maybe they should have begged for something else. Because the moisture, it was coming. His cracked, chapped lips he was always biting, pursed out, the phlegm oozing in slow motion towards my pried open eye. The other heads clunking together to get in on the action, shoulders and hair pressed up close in a huddle. Unable to scream because if I opened my mouth, guess where all that saliva would end up. And then I was somewhere else. The smell of mothballs and Lysol and fecal matter. The weathered old hands, devoid of any padding or life. Papery skin draped over every visible tendon and blue vein. While my mom stared out the nursing home window with tears in her eyes, they reached out from under the quilt, blindingly groping for anyone, found my wrist. I saw my own frightened face for the first time, saw all over it again, but from different angles. The rasping, toothless mouth flapping at me in a dying fish death knell delirium. Finally, an escape. They said I would find my own people in college. The lecture hall was full of strange faces, and they all seemed to be staring at the camera as it made its way down the aisle. No seats here. Keep moving, buddy. That's what their faces told me. The panic rising up in my throat and my heart racing, and I had to excuse myself to sit in a stall in the public restroom until it passed. And it only happened each and every day. They told me they didn't take attendance in college. I just had to show up for the tests and I'd be fine. I could study on my own. I holed up in my dorm room for days, never talking to a living human for long stretches of time. Academic probation and second chances until I finally withdrew and went back to my mom's house, defeated. Tears are streaming down my face and I'm dry heaving sobs between my fingers. I know what's coming. And I don't want to see. A few kids up to no good, but nothing too illegal. just some firecrackers in the vacant lot where we used to play. The bottle rockets in the Pringles can seemed harmless at the time, all bark and no bite, staccato explosions bouncing harmlessly off the dirt, until the wind caught the cigarette lighter's flame and whipped it back onto my thumb, and I yelped and flailed my arms, knocking the can down at an angle, the fuse lit. The rocket fired towards the neighborhood, the roofs of all those houses, and we ran away in mischievous glee, like nothing could ever catch us. The camera moves down an empty street on a quiet afternoon, its operator breathing heavily into the microphone. Off in the distance, you can hear sirens. Huge billows of smoke roll out of the small wooden-framed house, orange flame licking the roof. The fire roars, and rafters fall, and sparks fly. I can't take it anymore. I pick up my computer screen and hurl it across the room, its cord dragging the tower halfway across the desk before it disconnects itself. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's what I tell myself as I pound my head on the desk, smearing my tears and snot all over the surface. I'm referring to the facts as presented on the impossible video recording, what I couldn't watch. I'm referring to the fact that I didn't follow the rule to completion. I'm referring to the entirety of my miserable existence, whether I keep breathing or not. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And just then, when I'm at my lowest point, when the elevator of my panic sinks to the deepest pit of my despair, when I feel like I'm coming out of my skin, when I want to plunge the fingers of both of my hands into the depths of my mouth, pulling as hard as I can in opposite directions, ripping myself in half, rip myself out of this world. Just then, there's a knock at my door. I need your help. Should I answer it? It's innocuous at first. It's the shave and a haircut of polite rapping knuckles. Yet soon, it grows more insistent. The meaty thud of someone hammering away with the side of their clenched fist. Instinct is to run back to my bedroom or bathroom and shut the door, cowering until it goes away. It has to be a coincidence. The knocking continues. My tears recede and my cheeks dry. I look over my shoulder towards the front door, rubbing my nose with the back of my hand. There's no harm in looking through the peephole, is there? As much as I would hate to, I can always call the cops if I get too worried. Maybe it's one of those meth heads. I start towards the door, push my face to the hole. There's a man out there, past middle-aged. He's wearing a button-up vacation-type short-sleeve shirt, khaki shorts, white socks spout from his white tennis shoes and up his calves. The porch light is on, and the moths and bugs hover around. They flutter drunkenly past his bald head and bounce off his face, but he doesn't swat at them. He just stands there with a frozen, toothy grin, staring. He pounds on the door again. I outweigh him. At least. There's a softball bat within reaching distance from the front door. I had brought it after the apartment manager had reported some break-ins. I open the front door. Just a crack. His eyes light up when he sees me.
Good evening, sir.
Wooden-looking teeth, and his mouth stayed fixed in that grin, but just kind of flapped enough for the words to come out. Like he's a ventriloquist dummy. His voice sounds like a chain-smoking Sesame Street character's. Can I help you? I asked.
Yes, I believe you saw my message several times over the past month. I was just following up on that,
he says. His lips are a maroon color, and with the door open, I can see that his skin is pale white, covered in some type of powdery makeup. The thick lines and wrinkles of my face are spared, somehow looking even more noticeable through the dusted white. Simply put, he looks ghastly, his eyes wet and shiny from the sunken craters.
A message?
I asked.
Yes, online. I know you've had to have seen it. You're on there quite a bit.
I think you got the wrong guy, I said, stepping back. I think of slamming the door in his face, but his foot has inched into the threshold. I just want to ease out of this situation with as little confrontation as possible.
It's not a big deal. I just need you to fill out these surveys and you'll qualify for a $250 Amazon gift card.
He says, holding up a stack of papers. I'm good, I say.
Come on, it's $250. And no scam. Everybody always thinks that, but I can assure you it's legit. Just a simple survey and we mail you the gift card.
I notice he has a smear of barbecue or tomato sauce at the corner of his lip. Do you routinely do this so late at night? I ask.
I don't know. Do you routinely eat so much disgusting fast food?
He says back, looking over my shoulder and into my living room, the crumpled up bags peeked out from under the couch, the tower of pizza boxes.
God, how do you live like that, you absolute slob?
His voice drops an octave at the last words. For the first time in our conversation, he is no longer smiling. His eyebrows have dropped down. He glares. I'm scared all over again. I want him gone. Whatever, I say, and take the papers out of his hands, bark goodnight to him, and slam the door. Looking through the peephole, I see him skip down the stairs. He disappears into the dark of the parking lot, the top of his pale, bald head the last thing I see. I frisbee the stack of papers onto the pizza boxes, swear that tomorrow I'm gonna finally clean up the piles of trash that have infiltrated my living room. Every night he comes. Most nights I ignore him. He eventually leaves, but it can take hours of knocking and pounding. I've even caved and filled out a couple of the surveys, a long, erroneous task of answering questions of whether or not I've heard of specific brands or companies. There are questions asking me to rank on a scale from 1 to 5 how well I like Charmin Ultrasoft. One particular question stands out to me. Buried within so many other innocuous questions, it asks, does the sweet bite of Mountain Dew sufficiently distract you from your greatest sin? I write down N.A. Filling out the survey isn't enough to deter him. He always takes them with a smile and thanks me profusely. But the next night, he's back. I never get my Amazon gift cards either, and when I ask, the creepy little man plays dumb. He doesn't get any less creepy, no matter how many times he shows up. Still has that same wooden smile. Still looks like his head had been dredged in flour. In fact, he actually is starting to look even more ghoulish with each visit. The lines in his face deeper, his eyes more sunken, lips wetter. I tell the property manager about the strange visitor, and he simply shrugs.
Nobody else has reported him. He's not harming the property, is he? Look, if you want, I can put up some no soliciting signs, or you can make your own. Tape it to your door.
But, of course, the sign goes disregarded. He's out there banging away the night I put it up. I open the door and tell him to please leave me the hell alone.
Excuse me, would you like to fill out a customer survey to receive a $250 Amazon gift card in the mail?
He asks, and I scream,
get out! Get the hell out!
No reaction, not even a blink. A trace of drool oozes out of the corner of his mouth, and it's thick and viscous and hangs in the air forever like it's made of glue.
Fine, I scream. Give me your survey.
I've got a lighter this time, and I laugh maniacally as I burn it up right there on the porch.
Take your time,
he says, and skips down the stairs. Later, I'm sitting on the commode, my elbows resting on my bare knees in the closest I'd ever get to a daily act of meditation, and a stack of papers slides under the bathroom door. It's a questionnaire, a survey. In a rush, I open the door. I halfway lean out in an effort to shield my below-the-waist nakedness and look down the hall. No one is there.
Sir, are you aware that this is the third time you've called? And that we've sent an officer out both times and no threat was found.
Yeah, but it took over 2 hours for anybody to show up. He was long gone by that point.
So are you requesting another officer tonight? Have you talked with the property manager?
Yes and yes.
Do you have any evidence of this alleged trespasser? A name or surveillance footage, or maybe you've taken a picture of him the last time he was there, like with your phone?
I tried that. It came out all squiggly, like he was a scribble of a person. He must be wearing some sort of camera blocker. Something that scrambles the phone's signal or lens or something.
Hmm. And this is the same guy. The one from the dark web or something. That came about because you didn't follow a rule from a rogue broadcast on your video game stream.
Yes, I know how it sounds.
If the responding officer has reason to suspect that you are experiencing paranoia and are a danger to yourself or others, then there's a possibility you could be detained under an emergency order for a mental health evaluation. Are you aware of this?
I am now.
So I ask again, do you need us to send an officer?
I think I'll be fine.
Okay, then. Call us if you need us. Good night.
It's gotten to where I'm scared of closed doors. If the door's already open, there can't be a knock, right? I now use the restroom with the bathroom door open. A development in a long line of developments in a life of solitude that I suppose was inevitable. For the next few days, I sit in my living room with the front door wide open. The fresh air is actually kind of nice. I don't know why I don't do this more often. Through some furniture rearranging, my computer desk is now angled so that it's facing the door. I keep one eye on my screen and the other on the doorway. The softball bat rests on the floor by my feet, at the ready. For several days, he doesn't come. It's like I'm daring him to appear there. Eventually, I let my guard down, get more absorbed in my videos, stare at the screen with both eyes. There's a flicker of movement in my periphery. He stands at the threshold, smiling, papers clutched in his hand. "Evening," he says in that awful voice. "Get the hell out," I yell, pointing the softball at him like I'm Babe Ruth calling my shot. "Can I interest you in an Amazon gift card for the simple task of filling out an easy survey?" He continues, unfazed. I'm standing up, crossing the living room. "Or perhaps you'd like some hell of a deal on some insurance. You know she wished she had that when the polyester nightgown melted to her skin. You should have seen the way it bubbled and merged with her thigh, the way it peeled off." The softball bat clangs off his bald dome, and he doesn't even raise his arms in a defensive posture. Just lets it come. He's a puppet. He's not real. We're all puppets. And he sinks down to the landing of my balcony porch, the blows still striking his head and neck and shoulders. "But you should let me finish," he tries to say through busted lips, broken teeth, but I keep swinging, blinded by an intense fury, the front of his head crumpling in. The aluminum bat rings off concrete, vibrates my arms. It's just me out on the porch, swinging away at empty ground. My neighbors lean out on the balcony railing, looking over at me with strange looks on their faces. There's a thin girl with dusty skin and dirty blonde hair and dark gray circled eyes and a stocky guy with a flat-billed baseball cap and a chin-strap beard.
"You all right, bro?"
the guy asks. I look around frantically. He was just right here. There's no trace of him. Not even a drop of blood.
"Damn, it must have been a hell of a spider. I live and let live with those guys, but you do you. They help with the roaches, you know."
I know what it has to be. I've reached a tipping point with my mental health. Can't be sure of anything. All that self-isolation at home and minimal human interaction, it's finally driven me insane. It must be some sort of depersonalization, derealization disorder, and now I'm finally hallucinating things. People from the internet. People from the internet are all I ever know about. Only natural that they'd start to manifest. Maybe I do need to be taken in. I haven't gone into work in 6 days. I've simply no call, no showed, and I've had 17 missed calls from them and 21 missed texts. The only allowance I've made myself is that I've responded to just enough texts from my mom so that she doesn't contact the police for a wellness check on me. If I were to hear them knock on the door and respond in all the ways I have to my current knocking tormentors, the outcome would likely be disastrous. But it doesn't matter, because he's quit knocking on the front door ever since the softball incident. From a bedroom window, he raps on the glass, that grinning face in the dark. His voice calls to me from the air vents. Soon, it's not just him. Soon, the others start to come, too.
Boo.
A dry, raspy voice whispers from the drain in my kitchen. I lean my head closer.
Boo.
The whispering continues.
Boost your credit score with these 6 simple tricks. Just write your social security number on a receipt. Slide it down the drain.
I poke a chopstick down the drain and meet a spongy resistance, something that pushes back. The chopstick clatters in the sink as I jump back like I've touched a hot stove. One knock on the door is a guy in a tailored suit. It's late when he comes, and his sunglasses are darker than the dead night around us. It doesn't matter that he's wearing sunglasses at night, like that old song. It doesn't matter because I'm willing to bet there's nothing behind those shades. Empty eye sockets or endless voids into black nothingness, I'm sure.
"Sup, dude," he says. "I'm offering some exclusive secrets on crypto, and I need you to not pass up on this offer."
I say.
"Look, I can understand your skepticism, but look at you."
He gestures towards me and then back to himself.
"Now look at me. With crypto, my future's so bright that I gotta wear shades."
I'm mildly intrigued by the appearance of this new individual, but yeah, it's more spam stuff. So far, these things haven't ever touched me. At this moment, this new development is nothing more than a novelty. "Who are you supposed to be? The spam commenter of Christmas Future?" I ask.
"Hey,"
he says.
"Chiller with the wise guy stuff. Last time I looked, I'm the guy swimming Scrooge McDuck style in the currency of the future. And you're the fat loser in his apartment eking out a pathetic existence. You really want to live this way? Come with me and I'll show you the way."
His voice trails off and he looks off into some other realm to the left of my doorway. "What do you need?" I sigh.
"I need an investment of $250,
he says. And an inky black liquid is dripping down his cheeks from somewhere behind his sunglasses. It runs into his mouth, and he smacks his lips, his pearly white teeth turning shiny gray from it. "You need real money to invest in our fake money," I ask.
"It's all fake money,"
he says, and black liquid drip off his chin without him noticing. His fashy haircut is swooped back into an impossible tower on his head, and I think I see something peeking out from that mass of golden hair. A beak or a spider leg. "Well, I'm out of a job. I'm gonna need all the fake money I can get."
"Where we're going, we don't need jobs. Isn't that what you want? All the time in the world to mess around on the internet? All that time for escape? Has it worked for you yet?"
"Has what worked?"
"What you're currently doing to get away from yourself. I can offer you true escape. Escape from that little secret of yours. The awful person you become. With enough money, you can rebuild yourself into someone that doesn't feel sorry for themselves. Just let me in, and we'll get this thing going."
"I'm not ready yet," I said.
"Think about it,"
he says, and slides his middle finger under his sunglasses, pulls something out, and hands it to me. It's a business card. All that's on it are a few words in languages and symbols I've never seen. He flashes deuces at me, gives me a nod, saunters off down the steps and into the night. They are relentless.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
The spam ghosts leave notes scattered around my house. They write their offers in the dust and grime of my kitchen countertops and furniture. There's files that appear from nowhere with promises of supplements that can make my dick bigger and increase my stamina. From my fridge, a muffled feminine voice tells me that hot and horny singles are in my area. Open the door and a lingerie-clad woman, folded in on herself and shivering, topples out. She can't be taller than 4'2", and she flops around on the floor like a fish, stares at me with glassy eyes, flapping her mouth, and making this popping noise with her lips. I scream and stagger backwards out of the room. She's gone in an instant, like she was never even there. Maybe she wasn't. There was the man in the mechanic's coveralls with the expressionless face and glazed over plastic eyes of a crash test dummy who warned me of my vehicle's expired warranty, who said that it could be fixed if I only gave him a vial of my blood. The rusty needle entered my vein and my blood swirled into a green cylinder. How could I forget the 50s housewife with a blood-spattered apron and a butcher knife? And a black eye who said that it didn't matter that I no longer had my convenience store job, that I could make $3,000 a month from home if I signed up for her nifty calling service. I slammed the door when she handed me a corded phone with a voice on it that hissed at me that killing myself would never be enough. What about the man in nothing but yellowed briefs who offered a cure for all the pain in the world? He was covered in sores and said he'd never been healthy. Said I only had to drink from the brown bottle he had wrapped in a brown paper bag. He told me that doctors hated him because of this knowledge and how he was cutting into their bottom line. Told me this as he picked a scab from his cheek and spit a broken tooth out into my apartment. And there were the voices. Oh, there were the voices. They bounced around my apartment and into my ears and brain. Whispers and conversational volumes and angry shouts. You are worthless, and you deserve this, and many people in much worse situations than yours have picked themselves up and dusted themselves off just fine. Never in the history of man has someone done so little with so much, and it's because you're worthless. Boo-hoo, you were bullied. Should have used the fighting tips contained in my pamphlet. How to be a confident alpha male. Maybe it's not too late. Just tuck 3 easy payments of $19.99 in the rotten tree stump in the vacant lot behind the apartment complex. You say you're shy and anxious around people. Sack up. It's just sweaty palms and a racing heart rate. There's people in the world that don't have clean water, and you're worried that, what, someone's gonna look at you funny? Or you're gonna say the wrong thing or stutter a little? Nobody cares. Nobody even remembers you. Nobody even thinks about you. Better yet, why don't you just stay in your apartment because you should be tucked away where nobody can see your disgusting self? Because nobody's even going to miss you either way. Jesus Christ, take a walk for God's sake. Download my podcast and learn how to not be such a loser. I yelled back to the voices, and it shut them up for a while. I covered my bedroom windows with tinfoil. No faces could peer at me through the glass. Ditto for the bathroom mirror. I put salt around every doorway and threshold and finger paint crucifixes with ketchup packets all over the walls of my apartment. Cotton balls stuffed into my ears and wrapping my arms around my knees and rocking back and forth in the corner of my room with my overturned mattress as a barricade. They'll never find me here. Peace at last. Famous last words. With my face buried into the dirty carpet, I try to smother the moans and cries of my overwhelming pain. My throat is dry and ragged from begging for the sweet release of it all. Why don't I just leave? Just walk out the door? Get some help? I don't know. I've asked myself the same question, and I can't come up with a good answer. I think it's because maybe I deserve this. I think it's because it all feels like a dream, a nightmare. Yeah, but something that I just have to let pass. Some force keeps me from getting up and walking outside my front door and into the sunlight. It's not like this is an alien sensation. I've felt it time and time again, even when I was back working, on my days off when I stayed in bed all day and could not will myself to get up. With each day, I have less and less energy. I'm one step further from reality. I'm a few frozen burritos and a couple packets of ramen from having to leave my apartment. But I can't go outside. That's where they are. In my apartments, I suffer. I suffocate in the silence and solitude. I suffuse into the carpet, unable to get up from the floor for hours. My stomach hurts, my body hurts, my head hurts, my skin hurts. Text my mom. I need some space right now. Getting help soon. Can't let her see me like this. Can't let her know. Can't be a burden. I let my cell phone die and don't get up to charge it because I don't get up at all. Not since I chewed up half the bottle of antidepressants from my bathroom, passed out, and woke up in a pool of vomit. Hair is a greasy, matted mess, grown long from the four-guard clipper trim that I usually do over the bathtub, the haircuts I haven't given myself in weeks. My clothes have to reek, but I wouldn't know as I've long gone smell-blind to the stench of the apartment and my filthy body. I've pissed my pants no less than 3 times. Only one of those was out of laziness. The rest was out of fear. Mice dash in and out of the detritus of Chinese takeout and pizza boxes. The last pizza I've ordered has sat on the porch for days, trampled by my frequent solicitors. Fine, I'll call 911. Tell them what's going on. I don't care if they come to take me away. Lock me up in an institute. I'm locked up here as it is. But yeah, the phone is dead, and I can neither find the knowledge or energy to figure out how to get it charged. Footsteps walk around me. They pay me no mind. Maybe they know their work here is done. Maybe they know that I'm too pitiful to even bother with. When you're so low, even the ghosts feel sorry for you. It sounds like a country song, I think, and I chuckle out loud. That chuckle is the tiny snowball that sets off an avalanche of hysterical laughter. My face doesn't know what to do with this foreign smile spreading across my cheeks. My ears can't register the sound of joyous laughter. I realize I'm alive. I'm alive. And if I'm still alive, there's still a chance. I'm rising off from this filthy floor, up from this downward spiral, up from this bottomless pit. I'm on my hands and knees, about to push myself to my feet, and that's when I hear it coming down the wall. A high-pitched whine. The squeaky wheel from the little one-handled dolly that a green oxygen tank rides in behind her. The ashy vision of her emerges from the shadows. A cherry ember glowing in the region of her face. A blast of cigarette smoke envelops me, and I'm back down on the ground, gagging and coughing. It's like all of the smoke of a packed casino has filled the space of my apartment. The whine grows louder, and she stands over me as I curl into a fetal position.
I'm sorry.
I beg. I'm too dehydrated for tears. Charcoaled face leering into mine, plastic oxygen tubes snaked from her nose over the blackened, bubbled half of her face, cigarette dangling from the burnt marshmallow lips. She gets closer and closer. She doesn't say a word, just shoves me down with her non-burned hand with surprising ease, starts to push the cherry of the cigarette towards my face, stubs it out of my cheek. I'm swiping and spasming, screaming in cries that grow higher and higher pitched.
You don't have to fight anymore,
she says in a deep smoker's voice. Kathleen Turner gargling razor blades. But then, in the voice of an angel, she says, "It doesn't have to hurt anymore." Every nerve ending of my skin tingles with a pleasant sensation. Divine goosebumps. "The end is beautiful," she says. The voice of an angel juxtaposed with the face of pure death. Suddenly, I feel at peace. "Okay," I say. And she reaches behind her and lifts the green oxygen canister above her head. It doesn't take a rocket surgeon to figure out my impending fate. My head and face smashed with the oxygen tank until nothing is left but a bloody mess. I take a deep breath. The tank begins its rapid descent. I think of my mom. No note, no texts, no nothing. They interviewed a bunch of survivors that jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and a common denominator among them was that during the plummet to the water below, they all started to feel regret. This had all been a terrible mistake, they realized, and they would stop it if they could. But they couldn't. I'm not falling. I'm not a slave to the inevitability of gravity. I can crawl back through the air and back to the bridge. It'll be like I never even jumped. I roll to my left, and the oxygen tank slams on the carpet right beside my head. I'm squirming toward my front door, not even looking back. Behind me, she howls with rage. Blustery clouds of cigarette smoke fill the apartment, whipping around in a gale-force wind, a nicotine-stained tornado. And I'm on my knees, and I'm on my feet, and I feel the oxygen tank pound into my hip as I struggle with the door. Scorched skeletal fingers tear at my shirt, and I burst out into the night. I'm on my porch, panting and catching my breath. Staggering, stumbling, tripping, falling, rolling down the first set of stairs and onto the landing. I don't even look back. In the parking lot, someone or something clatters over by the dumpsters. A skinny guy with a bike is over there. He's watching me.
"Hey, yo, you all right?
The hell? It looks like you've seen a ghost."
"I'm good,"
I say. My legs feel weak as I take a few steps towards him. He seems normal, and it's not like I'm going to go back to my apartment at the moment. I walk over to him. He's got a little trailer attached to his bike. There's a bunch of junk in it, a plastic bag, wads of copper wire, a speaker, a black plastic Blu-ray player.
"What are you doing?"
I asked.
"Just scavenging. What'd I do?"
he says, nodding to the pole behind.
"Find anything good?"
"Hit or miss tonight," he says. "Garbage day is tomorrow. Trying to find some treasures."
"Look, man, this is gonna sound weird, but are you... I mean, do you have a home?"
"Why? You offering up a place?"
"No, I'm just wondering if it's cool if I hang out here for a bit. I could help you or something."
"Old lady kick you out?"
he asks with a smile. He's missing one of his upper canines, a black gap in his grin.
"Something like that.
I'm not going back in there," I say, gesturing at my apartment.
"Guys like you, ain't you got some place to go?"
He sizes up my appearance, lets me adjust under the streetlight.
"Oh, you're looking rough. Yeah, you can hang out."
We make our way around the apartment complex, stopping off at dumpsters. The next few are busts, nothing of value or interest. He doesn't ask many questions while he works, too focused on the task at hand. His name is Bobby, and he says he's been living this way for a few years now. After this, I follow him a couple blocks down the alley to a vacant lot behind an auto repair shop. At the back of the lot and next to the fence is tall grass surrounding a scraggly tree. A blue tarp hangs from a branch, forming a makeshift tent.
"You sure you don't got nowhere to go?"
Bobby asks again. I realize that my phone and wallet are back in my apartment. Not going back there tonight, I really don't have anywhere to go. Old lady said she'd call the cops, I said.
All right, then,
he says. He lies on a spread-out sleeping bag behind the tarp. I recline on a flattened patch of grass with a dirty sweatshirt as a pillow. It's the soundest sleep I can ever remember. Mind turns completely off as soon as my eyelids close. No dreams, and I awaken to bright sunlight and the roar of a lawnmower in the distance. If there's no home or no apartment or no primary domicile, then there's nothing to haunt, right? It's places that get haunted, and not people. Or so this is what I've come to believe. I finally did what you guys have been trying to get me to do. What maybe the spam ghosts have also been suggesting. I left. The night after my near demise, Bobby went into the apartments and got my phone and wallet and a garbage bag of clothes. I let him take whatever was salvageable, including my desktop monitor and TV, and we pawned it all and split the money. Bobby, he shows me the ropes of the lifestyle he lives. Shows me how you can get free meals over at Food and Shelter, powdered eggs, oatmeal and toast for breakfast, bacon on Fridays. The only cost is having to have someone read the Bible to you every now and then. They have showers they let you use too. He doesn't stay in the same place for long, and with some of the money, we buy a couple of tents and sleeping bags, and we move out to a large encampment down by the river, under the large interstate bridge. There's a community of sorts here. Lots of crazies, lots of addicts, lots of drugs. Everybody down here is lost in some form or fashion. I fit right in. Bobby, he tells me he's clean. I even attended an NA meeting with him one time, but I guess at the river he gets triggered, and I see him duck off and hit a glass pipe on more than one occasion. He starts acting differently, always messing with his scavenged junk. He takes apart worthless electronics and puts them back together again, his hands tweaking the whole time. Soon he disappears, and I don't see him for a long time. There's music at night, and campfires, and sometimes somebody is grilling something, and sometimes they share. Sometimes there's a case of beer for everyone to partake in. The hardcore people have their own hoarded jugs. This guy, Mudcat, who stays a while, he catches several behemoth catfish with his bare hands. I'm talking the size of border collies. He hoists them over his shoulder, and that evening, we have fish. It tastes like dirt. All this walking around and different eating, I start to lose weight. Have to get some new clothes from the Salvation Army. I tell my mom I'm on a new diet and exercise program and that I'm getting good results. Later, a hippie-ish guy in a van shows up at the encampment, and he takes me to a rock climbing gym, shows me the ropes, literally. His name is Tom, and he's in the area visiting a relative on hospice. Says he's rolling out soon to a place with real elevation, real rocks to climb. Says he needs a belay partner. I tell him I'll think on it and get back to him. They were just lulling you into a false sense of security. They're just messing with you. This whole time, it was just so that you would get a taste of what you would miss. They know. They know what they're doing. What's the fun in killing a depressive? Too easy. You're giving them what they want. No, that's not it. All that's behind you. It's just someone from the camp here up stealing your wallet, rifling through your stuff. These are the thoughts that run through my mind when I see the shadow looming outside my tent. Somehow, the mere presence of it awakens me. Or, more disturbing, it's been standing out there for a very long time, waiting for me to stir. How does one knock on a tent? I don't know. But a wooden knocking sound emanates from the zippered entrance.
Hello, it's me again. I know you're in there.
How could I forget this voice? I don't say anything.
Open this tent or I'll burn it right up,
the voice says with a mean-spirited laugh.
Okay, okay,
I say, making my way toward the flap. From my low vantage points, I'm greeted by the thick white tennis shoes, the socks hiked up blue veiny legs. I crawl out and stand up. It's the first visitor, the guy whose face I smashed with a softball bat.
Hello again, sir. Glad to see you. How you doing?
He asks, jovial and cheerful as he's ever been, face frozen like always. Defeat fills my veins. I can't think of anything to do other than cooperate. There's no way to beat them. I start to say, fine, but he cuts me off.
I'm here to tell you about some huge medical savings on your home medical equipment.
What?
Medical equipment from the home. You know, like hospital beds, bedside commodes, oxygen concentrators, portable oxygen. Never have there been savings like this.
Oxygen?
Yes. Just be sure to not smoke while wearing your oxygen. You just might catch your face and house on fire and convince some youngster that he was responsible for your death, while coincidentally, he accidentally shot a bottle rocket onto the roof of a nearby house, where it promptly fizzled out and didn't harm anyone.
The wind is knocked out of me. My legs are jello. I try to speak. No words come.
By signing up for the supplementary plan, you'll get huge savings by entering into a network of quality physicians.
He continues.
Are you telling me?
My knees are on the ground, eyes exploding with hot tears.
Oh, shh, shh, shh,
he says, pushing an ice-cold finger to my lips. He places his other hand on his head.
I just need to ask you one more question.
I can only choke out a sob in response.
How do you feel about the recent quality of food at Arby's? Is the same? Better? Worse? I haven't been in a while?
What?
Option D. I understand. Thank you for your time,
he says with a bow and tromps off into the night.
So, this is Colorado, I say, more of a declaration than a question. It hasn't been that long since we've passed the state line coming out of Kansas. Through the windshield, I-70 stretches across a slightly crumpled flatness. The sun is blinding, setting in the west. I can't see the mountains.
Yep,
Tom says. I figured the Rocky Mountains would be a little rockier than this, I say.
But Tom, he doesn't catch my reference, doesn't take the assist, only responds,
you usually can't see him because of the sunlight.
In my pockets, my phone buzzes. I answer.
Hey, Mom. Oh, yeah, I just crossed into Colorado. No mountains yet. Yeah, actually, yeah. I think I'm feeling pretty good.